This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. For those who do want to go out and eat every so often, but hopefully without breaking the bank, folks might turn to the nostalgia, and ideally lower prices, of a diner. Now that word, diner, probably evokes images of a very specific type of restaurant. Maybe a little retro, with chrome chairs, long counters, perhaps even a rotating pie case and a jukebox machine. I saw a story in Eater the other day called The Myth of the American Diner that looked at the history of these restaurants and how they live in our imagination today. Jaya Saxena is a correspondent at Eater and wrote the piece. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what exactly is the American Diner and where did it come from?
So the American Diner, I think of it as a place that is supposed to be this great sort of democratic restaurant. The roots of the American diner really exist in lunch carts that came about in the 1870s, 1880s on the East Coast that existed to serve blue-collar workers. And because they were cheap and because they operated at all hours of the day and because you didn't need to be dressed well to eat in them the way that you did if you went to a restaurant in a hotel, anyone really could go in there. At a certain point, they turn into physical locations, and that is sort of where the diner was born.
Your story is called The Myth of the Diner, and I wonder what that myth is and how it stacks up to reality.
Yeah, I think we all know that politicians going to diners, talking to quote-unquote regular people, you know, this is such a hallmark of the campaign process now. And there was one politician, it was New York Governor Kathy Hochul, who had gone to a diner in Long Island. And, you know, I looked it up and I looked up the menu and just realized this is expensive. And, you know, it was in a pretty wealthy town. But I was looking at it and thinking that this would be a considerable expense for anybody who wasn't, you know, solidly middle or upper middle class. And so to me, that did not feel like a place where, right, quote unquote, everyone was welcome.
I want to get back to that everyone is welcome point in a bit, but I wonder when this happened, this shift from diners being, you know, sort of the place where working class or people with not that much money could get a bite to eat, and this sort of higher and more expensive diner that you saw a politician visiting. When did this happen and how?
Totally. Yeah. So I think that a lot of it happened around the, you know, I want to say between the 30s and the 50s. A lot of people had moved to the suburbs, moved their families to the suburbs, and these restaurant owners thought, okay, if I want to continue to do this, this is the new population of people with money that I need to court. So you see a lot of these diners moving from city centers to suburbs. I think that's where you see booths start coming in so families can sit together in a group instead of everybody being spread out along a lunch counter. A lot of times, if they had the room, they would move the kitchen to the back so you didn't have to see the food being cooked. And of course, this being in the 40s and 50s, a lot of these places were racially segregated spaces.
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit more. Part of what you lay out in your piece as a huge component of the myth of the American diner is this concept that everyone was welcome, because that was never really true, was it?
No, it was never true. So, I mean, right, even from the early days as a horse-drawn cart, these places would have been racially segregated. Then as diners become more of a suburban phenomenon, if you were a member of any sort of quote-unquote counterculture, whether that's just because you look like a hippie, whether you were queer, if you were a person of color, these are things that probably would have made you less welcome in these spaces, even if they didn't have an explicit policy And then obviously, you know, you see that play out in the civil rights movement, right? So many of the places where these sit-ins and these protests were happening were diners and lunch counters.
You know, I'm really stuck on this idea that politicians, you know, will say that they go to diners to connect with, you know, real Americans. And I wonder, given what you've learned about diners in America, what does that really mean? What are they actually saying?
I think what they're trying to say is that they are connecting to the working class, but to a very specific image of the working class. And they're talking about connecting to working class white people. I'm trying to figure out the best way to get at this. But I think that's it. What it is. And I think they're trying to tap into a very specific idea of Americans, somebody who is white, is working class, who maybe views themselves as not too political or perhaps politically moderate, someone sort of right in the middle of everything. And that is who politicians want to win over.
Not to spoil the piece too much, because people should go and read it. But at the end, you kind of concede that even if there's all this mythology around diners, maybe they actually are a microcosm of America. Why is that?
Yeah, well, you know, I do think, again, that the diner, for all its flaws, there is something that is true about where it came from. And, you know, when I go to the diner in my neighborhood, I do see a pretty big range of racial diversity there and generational diversity in a way that if I go to, you know, a Michelin-starred restaurant, I do not see the same sort of diversity usually. And I also think that people still want diners because for all their flaws, it's the idea of a third space is so important. This place that is not our home and not our office that we can go to for a comforting meal. And I think that there are a lot of diners that do provide that for a lot of people.
Jaya Saxena is a correspondent at Eater, where you can find her essay, The Myth of the American Diner. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.